Welcome to Capital Conversations by the Venture Asset Management Initiative, produced by IMD, your go-to podcast to understanding the dynamics in venture capital. Today, we're exploring the quiet predictors of VC fund performance with Michael Kim, founder at Sendana Capital. Sendana Capital is a San Francisco-based fund of funds firm, which was launched in 2010 and has over $2 billion in assets. Michael and Sendana Capital prefer smaller funds and are often a first call for emerging seed stage fund managers. The company has invested in many VC teams that have gone on to enjoy great success, like Forerunner Ventures, K9, and AI Ventures. In this episode, Michael focuses specifically on the strategies institutional LPs use to evaluate and partner with new and emerging GPs, covering key topics like identifying high potential investments, navigating long-term portfolios, leveraging secondary opportunities, and assessing cultural fluency in global markets.
We at Sendana focus on first-time fund managers. We are focused overall on emerging managers within venture capital and focused at the seed stage. So typically our fund managers are the first checks into a company. And so, you know, when there are market disruptions, we work very closely with these fund managers. Typically, our strategy is that we are the largest investor in each of our portfolio funds. So we have significant influence with the fund managers. And, you know, of course, they want to have us involved because we are very focused on this and have been focused on this for the last 14 years. And so, you know, just to use an example, in 2021 and 2022, it was a bubble in venture. A lot of capital was deployed at the early stage and especially at the late stage. And so we spent a lot of time with our fund managers talking about their portfolio construction, the discipline that they need to show in terms of valuation, the pacing of their investing, and whether to pursue opportunities that were not necessarily their primary focus. Because the flip side is, when you're in that moment, the fund manager is thinking, this is a great company, but yet it's 2 times higher valuation than what I normally do. Do I pursue it or do I let it go? And I think ultimately we spend a lot of time and diligence understanding the fund manager and their portfolio construction and importantly their discipline. One of the biggest issues in venture capital is style drift. And what I mean by style drift is, you know, a fund manager tells their investors, this is what I'm going to do. This is the stage. This is the valuation. This is the ownership targets that I want. And then, you know, over the course of the next 2-3 years, if they move away from that, I think that fund managers, investors would be very skeptical about the discipline of that fund manager. So, you know, I think those are sort of the elements that we focus on. And again, it really comes down to discipline.
Michael emphasizes focused execution, supporting overlooked nano funds, and guiding managers to maintain consistent portfolio strategies with clear targets for investments and follow-ons.
I think we can look at this sort of both at the Sendana LP level as well as the underlying portfolio funds. And so we've been very, innovative in terms of addressing what the different fundamental changes in venture are. So what I mean by that, for example, in the last 5 to 8 years, there have been a number of founders and operators, you know, meaning people like who are VP of product at Google or at a big technology company. A lot of them have these side funds. They have sort of small pockets of capital that they've been using to invest in startups. And basically in the institutional LP world, LPs have not been pursuing these tiny funds. So in 2021, we launched something called Nano, and it was really to focus on sub $20 million funds because it was a neglected space. But yet we saw in the day-to-day that a lot of founders wanted other founders or operators to be invested. And so we thought that was a great opportunity, and it's played out quite nicely. In terms of the portfolio fund level, we think portfolio construction is extremely important. Ultimately, an investor is buying the portfolio construction of a fund manager and then believing with high confidence that that fund manager can execute on that. And so maintaining that discipline around portfolio construction, by that, what I mean is number of companies, the average check size that you're going to write, what the target ownership is with that first check, and then also whether you have reserves to do follow-on investing into a handful of your companies. I think that is the portfolio construction that we spend a lot of time working with our fund managers on before we invest. And then once the fund manager is investing, we keep a very close eye on if they are sticking to that or whether they've done some non-orthogonal things. Like, you know, if we're focused on seed funds, is our fund manager making a late stage investment? That would be style drift, as I mentioned before, because again, as LPs, we are buying a certain portfolio construction and we're believing that the fund manager can execute on that.
Preparedness and strong networks are key in competitive seed markets. Top GPs combine operating experience with rapid proactive research and a clear market thesis to make swift, informed decisions.
So as part of our diligence process, we are looking for certain things. Our fundamental belief is that the fund manager is at minimum showing good track record, has a great network, has domain expertise, etc. So I would say that over two-thirds of our fund managers are actually former startup founders or operators. They'd worked at a bigger tech company in an operating role. And, you know, we think that at the seed stage, at the very early stage, founders want people who have that experience to help them build their companies, interview people, provide advice on when the right time to hire a certain person is, help with the go-to-market strategy, help with product roadmap. And so, you know, if you take a step back, at the early stage venture, a lot of the fund managers have that profile. If you look at late stage investors, they're typically more ex-bankers, lawyers, and consultants. And that makes logical sense. They are closer to the public markets and ultimately want to bring that company into the public domain. And so, you know, I think that in terms of the diligence that our fund managers are doing, they are relying heavily on their operating experience or their networks. And by networks, I'm thinking about other founders, other VCs, also other industry experts, and they bring all of that to bear. And the remarkable thing is, and I've seen this a number of times with our fund managers, they will tell me, Michael, we met with this amazing company today. And then 1 week later, I hear from them, Michael, we did 25 calls in the past week talking to various people about the opportunity. So I think one hallmark, I think, of very early stage investing is that people are very willing to take reference calls and also very proactive in pursuing people that they can talk to about an opportunity. And so, you know, obviously, if you have more time to due diligence, that is probably better. But amongst the best founders and best companies, you don't have that much time. And in a way, our fund managers have to have a prepared mind, meaning that they have to be pursuing companies that they have a thesis around, at least in that space, and have a sense of also who the competitive landscape is, and then also sort of basically mapping out within this part of software infrastructure, these are the existing incumbents, these are the newer startups. And then so they already know in their mind, okay, this new company kind of fits within this portion of that landscape. And these are the reasons why I think it'll win. And then they will pursue that, you know, the diligence part. And I think a lot of that is because, you know, again, the fund manager has a strong sense of what they're looking for.
The depth of a GP's founder network is gauged through founder-focused diligence. Sundana conducts extensive conversations with founders and investors to assess whether GPs are the first call for advice, showcase their own unique perspectives, and provide valuable downstream capital connections.
For example, when we are looking at a new fund manager, we spend a lot of time understanding their network. So this question is exactly right. And the way we look at the power of someone's network, you know, I'll give you an example. We have a fund manager, he's Dutch, he's based in San Francisco. His name is Dita Van Lohman. He was actually employee 25 at Stripe. And then he was also the first head of Stripe International. So he opened 27 markets for them. And then, oh, by the way, he's also the co-founder of a company called Commure, which is a digital health company. And most recently, General Catalyst invested at a $6 billion valuation. So Dita is very special because he has that operating experience at Stripe. And then also he has experience as a co-founder of a company that's now valued at $6 billion. And so he's a very unique person. We spent a lot of time talking to people who are at Stripe. We talked to a lot of the VCs involved with the digital health company. And we've talked to a lot of founders that he's worked with because he was an active angel investor. So what we do, and if you look at one of our investment memos, we typically talk to 30 to 40 people and we document all those conversations about the strength of that person's networks, the experience that that person brings to the table. And really, you know, one way that we get comfort that this person has that relationship power and has the network is through talking to these founders. Because when we talk to the founders of these companies, you know, we'll often ask, who else is invested in your company? Can you provide more color on whether Dita, just to use him as an example, is the first person that you call? And, you know, oftentimes unprompted, we would hear from these founders that, yes, Dita is the first person we call. He has a very unique perspective because of his background, and he has a phenomenal network. And not just, you know, with other founders, but downstream capital, meaning, you know, at the seed stage, you raise typically $4 million. It gives you 18 months of runway so that you can build your product, develop your software, and then you have to go out and raise your next round. That's the Series A. And a lot of founders do rely on their seed stage investors for introductions to the downstream capital. And these are like the multi-stage firms like a Sequoia or an Andreessen or an Accel. And so all of that we focus our diligence on. And really the best way to titrate that is to talk to founders. So our diligence is very founder focused.
GPs with hidden influence often leverage informal networks, acting as central nodes within powerful ecosystems. By identifying those deeply connected to talent hubs, like a group of engineers or founders from a leading tech company, such GPs can secure high-performing investments without relying on formal syndicates. These connections often translate into significant returns.
Another example is a fund manager that we have. His name is Ross Fubini, and his fund is called XYZ Ventures. His grandfather actually was the author of the Fubini Theorem. So XYZ actually is a sort of a mathematical nod to his grandfather. But, you know, Ross was a very early advisor to Palantir. And to give context about Palantir, you know, in the Bay Area, Palantir was founded in the early 2000s. They have, over the past 10, 15 years, built out an amazing network of engineers. And actually, they took over basically all of Palo Alto in terms of the real estate. Palantir is now relocated to Denver. But because of Ross's early, early role at Palantir as their senior advisor, he has had access to some of these amazing Palantir engineers who have now left to start their own companies. So I think Ross now has 18 portfolio companies that were founded by Palantir engineers. And these are companies that have, for the most part, performed very well. They've had groups like Founders Fund and Sequoia lead the next rounds. And they're, you know, operationally, these are companies that have grown into hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue. So if you were to ask any VC which companies have generated the best founders, the original group would be PayPal, right? The PayPal Mafia, Peter Thiel, David Sachs, Keith Raboy, Kevin Hartz, etc. But I think going back to what I was saying earlier about how we think of things as ecosystems and networks, we are looking for the central node or someone who has access to those central nodes and then being able to fund opportunities that are coming out of that. So I think Ross, he doesn't advertise the fact that he was very early at Palantir as an advisor, but I think has generated substantial alpha, substantial return for his funds because of his unique access to Palantir engineers.
GPs strategically manage secondary sales to de-risk their funds and return capital to LPs, all while maintaining substantial upside. Seed fund managers in particular have more flexibility with secondaries, capitalizing on a slower exit market to generate liquidity without signaling negative implications, ultimately boosting the fund's success.
We think it's a very big opportunity. So big that we actually launched a secondaries fund this year. And we are focused on acquiring LP interests in seed fund managers, and then to a lesser extent, you know, buying directly into companies. And when I look at the portfolio of fund managers that we have, I started Cendana in 2010. Our first fund is from 2012. A venture fund is usually 10 years plus 2 1-year extensions. So basically a 12-year vehicle. And so, you know, we have portfolio funds from 2012 and they are at the end of life. Now, a lot of them have just asked for extensions for a few more years, usually with no management fee. And the reason why they articulate they want to do that is because they probably have 2 or 3 value drivers remaining in the portfolio, and they want opportunities for those companies to ultimately exit. I would say that over the past 5 to 6 years, we've seen an increasing number of secondaries done by our fund managers. And so, for example, if we have a fund manager who has a company that's now valued at $2 billion and the position is worth $100 million to that fund manager may want to sell 10, 15, 20% of their position in order to bring capital back. I would say that in general, we don't believe that LP should be pressuring fund managers to sell just for DPI, just for distributions. We understand that venture is a power law game and that it takes time for companies to create substantial value. In our research, in our data, we believe it takes 7 to 8 years for a company to really inflect to being substantial value. And as long as the company is progressing well, showing strong growth rate, showing that they're cash flow break even or positive, then we believe that the fund manager should hold on to that position. But one of the interesting things about venture is that a lot of VCs believe in the mission of their companies and they have dreams. They think they're changing the world. But I always emphasize to our fund managers that at the heart of it, they are investors and they need to think about how they generate real returns, not paper returns, having a company marked up higher, but actually return capital. So while we don't certainly force any of our fund managers to take money off the table through secondaries, I think by working with us, they have a framework of thinking about when to take some off the table. And we've seen that increasingly over the 5 to 6 years. In fact, this summer, 2 of our fund managers did secondaries of their most valuable companies. They sold 10, 15% positions, but our fund managers have small funds. So even though they sold 10, 15%, they've actually returned 100% of their fund. And now you've sort of de-risked that fund, and yet they still own 80% of a company that we believe can generate even more value. And I'd make one more observation here, and that's specific to seed funds. Because seed funds are investing at the earliest stages, they have actually greater degrees of freedom around secondaries. And what I mean by that is, imagine that, you know, Sequoia is, I think, the best venture firm in the world. If they are the lead investor in a company, they cannot do a secondary, because then it sends a negative signal to all future potential investors, right? Sequoia is the lead investor. Why did they sell? And so I think it's harder for them to execute on a secondary. But with these billion-dollar plus kind of companies, no one really cares if a seed manager is selling part of their position. It's not a negative signal. And so I think ultimately our fund managers have been taking advantage of that. And we've seen substantial DPI over the last 5 years just through secondaries. And, you know, if you look at the markets over the next few years, you know, the IPO market in the U.S. is closed. Large-scale M&A has been dampened because of antitrust concerns. And I think in a world where venture capital exits have been more muted, secondaries are most definitely a very attractive path for our fund managers to do, and they have been very active at it.
Effective GPs maintain strong, transparent relationships with LPs, ensuring they understand the long-term nature of venture capital. They stay in constant contact, providing updates, discussing exit plans, and offering secondary opportunities to manage expectations. They focus on generating returns over time, not rushing exits.
I think at the heart of it, venture capital is a power law game, meaning that a handful of companies in a portfolio are going to generate most of the returns. It does take 7 to 8 years for these companies to inflect, to become billion-dollar kind of valuations or higher. And it takes even longer for some of those companies to ultimately exit and go public. So I think part of the responsibility of a fund manager is to find the right set of LPs who understand that the duration of venture is substantially longer than, say, private equity. Of course, if you're an institutional LP and you're thinking about small buyout and it's lower risk, you get a 2x, you get your cash back faster than in venture. The idea is that, of course, venture could generate substantially higher returns, including net IRRs of over 20% compared to 12, 14% for buyout. But it is a longer game. And so the ideal situation is where a GP has LPs who understand that time frame and not put pressure on premature exits. At Sundana, our approach is to be the lead investor in our portfolio funds. So what I mean by that is that we are the largest investor in 80% of our portfolio funds. A lead investor is not only just the being the largest check, but it's actually how we work with our fund managers. And so we are very, very hands-on. We want to be a true advisor to them. And so we are texting, emailing, calling daily with our fund managers. But structurally, we have a 30-minute monthly call with each one of our fund managers. No agenda, just talking about what they're seeing in the market, what their best companies are doing. Perhaps they have some new customer wins. Perhaps they hired some senior management team. So we have a very strong understanding of each one of our fund managers' companies and how their portfolios are doing. And as those companies progress over the years, we have a different kind of conversation, which is, you know, how are you thinking about their exit prospects? You know, our fund managers might say, well, the growth has slowed down, so they've hired an investment bank to do an M&A process. And, you know, again, we don't put pressure on that because we understand that venture is a long game. We also talk about potential secondary opportunities. We have a number of relationships with secondary funds, and we've made introductions to our fund managers to them, whether it's to buy a specific name or buy an LP out of that fund, or in fact, buy the entire fund. And so a lot of the potential options around secondaries we've provided to our fund managers through these introductions. And, you know, ultimately, I think that when we look at a new fund manager, it comes down to, again, that fact I mentioned earlier, which is, are they dreamers? Are they thinking they're changing the world? Or are they at the heart of it, fundamentally, are they investors and they recognize that they need to generate actual returns over a period of time?
Sundana focuses on three factors: a strong founder base, co-investor networks, and access to follow-on capital. While regions like Southeast Asia are overcapitalized, markets like London and Prague are maturing with better funding ecosystems. The key to success is how GPs tap into promising founders and leverage their networks.
So I started Sundana in 2010, our first funds from 2012. Since our beginning, we've been meeting with non-US seed fund managers. And the way we think about the opportunity set is really to understand the ecosystem that fund manager is in. And by ecosystem, we have sort of three vectors. The first one is, are there a lot of interesting founders, whether they're coming out of university or leaving a big public tech company, etc. So is there sufficient number of founders? Second thing that we think about is, are there enough co-investors that have been organized where they can invest alongside one of our fund managers? And then lastly, we think about follow-on capital. So as I mentioned before, you know, a seed round generally provides 18 to 24 months of runway. The founder and that person's team needs to be able to build something that has the metrics in order to raise the next round. In the US right now, It's about 2 to 3 million of ARR, of annualized revenue run rate. And for a company to go from 0 to 3 million of revenue is very difficult. But there are a number of, certainly in the US, venture capital funds that invest at the Series A. Let me give you a specific example. So in Singapore, we had met with a number of their very early stage fund managers for over 10 years. A number of them have actually become larger, you know, $200, $400 million kind of funds. And overall, that ecosystem on paper looks better because there are founders coming out of the universities and some of the larger tech companies. There are a number of seed funds, and then there are a number of Series A funds, the people who do the next round. And yet we still have perhaps a somewhat negative bias about the Southeast Asia ecosystem. And let me explain that, because it goes a little bit more into the macro. So you have countries like Philippines, Vietnam, you know, these are countries that have over 100 million people. The average age of those countries, the median age is probably 25. So a very young population, and they're showing strong economic growth. Everybody has a smartphone so they can transact. And so all those demographic trends look very positive. But when you actually look at the average transaction value, it's small compared to Europe or the US. And so it would be easy to fall in love with these demographic trends. And ultimately, one day they will be a meaningful customer, can spend meaningful dollars. But I think right now it's still an immature market. And on top of it, a lot of capital providers, a lot of funds have gone into Southeast Asia because they believe in these demographic trends. And so I actually think that Southeast Asia is overcapitalized. And what I mean by that is that, you know, you might have 100 founders a year that are very interesting and you'd want to invest in, but then you have $20 billion pursuing those 100 founders. And so valuations can get high. Maybe a number of those companies don't work out well. And so in my mind, Southeast Asia is overcapitalized. On a positive note, you know, we spent a lot of time with seed fund managers in London and over the last 10, 12 years. And we were hesitant about London because there were only, at the time, only a handful of Series A funds. You had firms like Index, Balderton, Accel London, some of the continental firms that were also active there. But today, you know, there are a number of new Series A funds like Blossom, for example, Mosaic. And so when you have a greater number of Series A funds, that makes it a better ecosystem for founders to raise their seed round and then raise their next round of financing. And then hopefully they're off to the races. So we think that London is a better ecosystem today than compared 5 years ago. One interesting, I think, at least for us, point is that we've actually invested in a fund in Prague. And so, you know, typically most people wouldn't think Central Europe is a great ecosystem for venture, but the fund manager we invested in there is called Credo. It's spelled C-R-E-D-O. We think they're phenomenal. And they've shown a lot of discipline about fund size. In their second fund, they were the seed investor in UiPath, which ultimately went public. Today, they have an investment in a company called 11 Labs, which is a AI text-to-voice company. And, you know, most recently, earlier this year, 11 Labs raised $80 million at a $1.1 billion valuation from Andreessen and from Sequoia. So while Credo is investing in an area where they don't have as many Series A funds, we've spent enough time with the team to understand that their reach is actually all of continental Europe and UK. And, you know, 11 Labs is actually based in the UK, but they do have Central European founders. And that's how Credo was able to discover them. So I think it's really understanding how the fund manager is getting access to amazing founders. And of course, as I mentioned, ecosystem is important because you want to be in the right geography, the right situation. One perhaps way that we do think about this is fishing, you know, fishing with a net. To be successful at that, you have to be fishing in the right location. And you have to be able to cast your net and actually bring it in. And I think that is a good analogy for venture capital funds particularly with regard to ecosystems.
Evaluating cultural fluency in GPs focuses on their ability to leverage local networks and scale globally. Successful GPs like those from Israel or Australia help founders think global from day one and expand internationally, using their unique regional advantages while working closely with founders in their time zones.
Historically in venture, people would say, we don't invest in companies unless I can drive to them, meaning their own local markets. And, you know, I think over the last 10 years, there's been greater transparency in venture. So you have a lot of fund managers talking about what they look for, LPs talking about what they look for, how they think about things. So I think there's just greater information out there for a founder to understand what is venture capital, who are the players, how do they think, how do the LPs think about those fund managers, et cetera. So all that is really good. And I think part of that is that some fund managers do have worldwide renown. So like just to give a recent example, Harry Stebbings in the UK runs a podcast called The 20-Minute VC, and he's been at it for over 10 years. He's built up, you know, a 2 million person kind of audience. And I think he has parlayed that reach and understanding and access of people into a fund. And, you know, we're not involved with Harry, but most recently he raised $400 million for his next set of venture funds. And so, but the question then becomes specifically at the earliest stages where we are focused on, our fund managers do want to roll up their sleeves and work very closely with the founders. And I think it's difficult if that's not in person or in the same time zone. So we don't actually have fund managers who are investing globally. We have fund managers who are investing in San Francisco, you know, the Bay Area, New York, Los Angeles, Boston. We have a number of fund managers who are investing nationally across the US, and maybe they have people in other locations like Boulder, Austin, Chicago, etc. But I think in general, at the earliest stages, you want to be in the same time zone. We don't have fund managers who are investing from the US into Europe or into Southeast Asia. Generally, I think we are very keen on the managers' networks, and almost by definition, their networks are weaker outside of their home territory. I gave the example of Credo, which is based in Prague. They invest across continental Europe and in the UK, but they have a special sort of hook. They are focused on Central European founders. And I think that is an ecosystem that they're harvesting and have access to. We have another fund manager in Australia called Blackbird. And Blackbird is well known because they own a very large part of a company called Canva. And, you know, Canva most recently was valued at around $30 billion. And to give a fun fact, Blackbird owns 15% of that. So that's a $4.5 billion position for them. And their first fund was $25 million. So they are one of the best performing venture capital funds. And it's also been publicly reported that they've sold some of that through secondaries. So it goes back to your earlier question about how fund managers think about secondaries. But Blackbird, as you know, Australia is a small country. I think it's like 10 million population. And so it's too small of a local market. So again, Blackbird is focused on Australian and New Zealand founders, but they can be in the US. So you can see where they have a special advantage with founders who are from Australia and New Zealand. And those companies also, if they are located in Australia, they're not thinking about just becoming an Australian company. They're thinking about being global from day one. So we want fund managers who understand the go-to-market path, how they access the US and European markets. You know, another example, of course, would be Israel. Israel is probably the second best ecosystem for venture, notwithstanding their current issues right now. But Israel is a very small country. And because of that, all of the founders in Israel who start companies are thinking about being global from day one. And then the Israeli VCs who are investing in them help them get their companies across the world into Europe, into the US. And so it really is about focusing on the special advantages that you might have, whether it's Blackbird focusing on Australian founders worldwide, Credo focusing on Central European entrepreneurs worldwide, or Israeli companies that are focused on being global from day one.
Michael Kim has highlighted the key traits that make successful GPs in venture capital, especially when managing LP expectations and leveraging networks. Three key takeaways emerge from this conversation. The first is the immense power of leveraging strong networks and ecosystems, whether through early exposure or relationships with key talent. A second key takeaway is to note the importance of managing expectations around long timelines and to educate LPs on the venture capital power law. The third is to note the necessity for GPs to have both global vision and local expertise to maximize opportunities in emerging markets and diverse regions. This leaves us with a fundamental question for future exploration. As new and emerging VC managers may scale into larger franchises, a critical challenge they face is maintaining the stability and consistency of their partnership structures. This is Capital Conversations from IMD. If you want to learn more about IMD's courses, go to imd.org. We'll see you next time.